ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 14 एंटाइटल ब्रह्मास प्रेयर्स टू लॉर्ड कृष्णा टेक्स्ट 17। यस्य कुक्षौ इदं सर्वं स्वात्मं भाति यथा तथा तत्त्वय अपिह तत्सर्वं किम् इदं मायया विना। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Just as this entire universe, including you, was exhibited within your abdomen, so it is now manifested here externally in the same exact form. How could such things happen unless arranged by your inconceivable energy? Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma stressed herein that without accepting the inconceivable energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot explain things as they are. Krishna, at the very outset, I would like to seek the blessings of all wonderful Vaishnavas sitting in this hall, temple hall, so that I should be able to speak a few words on this wonderful verse, on which there is only a three-line purport by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, we find this chapter is entitled Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. So, what is so great about it? Lord Brahma must be always offering prayers to Lord Krishna. But nevertheless, it is mentioned here, titled as Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. So the most exalted Lord Brahma is offering here in beautiful prayers to Lord Krishna. And what is the reason for this? The reason has been discussed in depth and in great detail in the previous chapter. And we can simply summarize it by saying that Lord Brahma tried to bewilder the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not realizing that the child in front of him was, you know, sharing the remnants of food of his cowherd boyfriends was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he tried to bewilder him. So he tried to show his opulence, he tried to show his mystic yoga to the Supreme Lord, and then realize that he was on the wrong foot. In fact, Lord Brahma cut a very sorry figure. His Grace Vishwarup Prabhu in his Sunday feast lecture were describing how great a devotee Lord Brahma is. So nevertheless, Lord Brahma is humbling himself and chanting these very beautiful prayers. Some of them are so eternal in their character and in their spiritual significance. So wonderful prayers which Lord Brahma is offering. So we have to approach these prayers ourselves with great devotion and love. Now, in this verse and in the preceding verse on which His Grace Gaur Hari Prabhu spoke yesterday so very eloquently, Lord Brahma is referring to that wonderful, inconceivable childhood pastime of Lord Krishna, wherein Mother Yashoda was trying to verify whether Krishna had eaten mud, and she asked him to open his mouth, his transcendental mouth, and Yashoda Mai was totally stunned to see not his tongue, not the oral cavity, not the teeth, but the entire cosmic manifestation with all its opulence in the teeny weeny, you know, lotus mouth of Lord Krishna. So this was described by Gaur Hari Prabhu yesterday. So it was an astounding and mind-boggling experience for Yashoda Mai. So much so that this particular awe-inspiring experience brought Yashoda Mai on the platform of, almost brought Yashoda Mai on the platform of awe and reverence, which is not Yashoda Mai is all about. She is Vatsalya Bhava, the supreme. She is the supreme most person representing Vatsalya Bhava. But this particular inconceivable pastime of Lord Krishna brought her almost to that platform of awe and reverence. But then the Lord brought her back by his Yogamaya potency, brought her back to the Vatsalya Bhava, which he relishes so much. So this is how the Lord's energies work in diverse ways. And you have to appreciate that Lord Krishna is indeed inconceivable. So in this verse, Lord Brahma is asking, Tat sarvam kimidam mayaya vina. He's saying, how could such things happen unless arranged by your inconceivable energy? Lord Brahma has his own experience to go by. He had seen the child Krishna replicate all the cowherd boys and all the cows which Lord Brahma had stolen and hidden. And later on, Lord Brahma had also occasion to see how the Lord had transformed all the cowherd boys and all the cows into 400 Vishnu forms, with all each form exhibiting all the opulences which the Lord Vishnu has at his command. So seeing this, Lord Brahma was naturally bewildered. The one who tried to test the Supreme Lord was actually, as one says, cut a sorry figure. Of course, there is nothing embarrassing to cut a sorry figure before the Supreme Lord Krishna. And Lord Brahma realized that. And he is offering such wonderful prayers. As His Holiness Bhakti Vijnana Goswami Maharaj was stating the other day, it is futile to try to understand the Supreme Lord by one's intelligence or try to analyze him, you know, it's extremely difficult. Or as he was saying, the Maharaj was saying, it's very, very, you know, exercise in futility to measure Lord Krishna. That's what he was saying. And this is indeed true, because this is also the saying of the Upanishad. The Shweta Shvatar Upanishad says, Nayam atma pravachane na labhya na medhaya na bahuna shrutena yam eva esha vrunate tena labhya tasya eshatma vivrunate tanum swam. So Shweta Shvatara Upanishad is very, very clear on the subject. It says that the Supreme Lord is not attained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, not even by much hearing. He is attained only by one who he himself chooses to reveal himself. So to such a person, the Lord manifests his form. So it's not that by trying to intellectually understand, showing our brilliance in interpreting the Vedas and the Upanishads and so many other philosophical texts, that we can attain Krishna or we can see the Lord as he is. It's not that way at all. It's, in fact, it is difficult. But it is possible that one can perhaps see the Supreme Lord or experience the grandeur, the opulence of the Supreme Lord when one has a simple heart, and one has a humble heart. So in other words, this particular text from I think it is from Kathopanishad, maybe I committed a mistake, it very clearly establishes the fact that the Lord manifests himself to the simple people. And who can envisage the Lord as inconceivable? Achintya. Now, we have that famous story of Narad Muni. I won't go into the details, but the cobbler could very readily accept that the Lord could thread an elephant through the eye of a needle. No. He did not try to measure the dimensions, you know, of the eye of the needle. He didn't think of that at all. He did not, you know, try to think, you know, how thin the needle is and how big the elephant is, what are the dimensions of the elephant. He straight away accepted the statement when Narad Muni told him that Lord Vishnu was threading an elephant to the eye of a needle. Now, this is the simple faith, simple-hearted faith, and where the devotee immediately accepts that Krishna and his energies are inconceivable. So very fortunate. I wish I had such a good fortune of being simple in my heart and, you know, accepting everything as Lord's energies being very, very unfathomable. So therefore, in this purport, which is referred to by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, it is mentioned here that Lord Brahma stressed herein that without accepting the inconceivable energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead, one cannot explain things as they are. So this is, however intelligent we may be, however well-read we may be, eventually you have to come down to accepting this. And that's what Lord Brahma has done now. He tried to use his powers to test Krishna. But now he has conviction that what he did was absolutely wrong. And in a very, very repentant mood, in a very humble way, he is offering prayers to the Lord. So this is the mood that is required to attain the Supreme Lord. So we have to understand that Krishna is unfathomable. But we need not try and understand all the facets of Krishna. It's an intellectual exercise which some people dwell on. Not that it is not important, but some people relish only that aspect of, you know, trying to understand what are the opulences of Krishna. But just what a great benediction it is just to be able to surrender to Krishna. What a great benediction. So that is what is required. So we notice that in this particular translation it is mentioned, how could such things happen unless arranged by your inconceivable energy? Now Lord Brahma is not saying to Lord Krishna that you are arranging everything. Whatever you do is transcendental. He's saying arranged by your inconceivable energy. So the energies of the Lord are non-different from Krishna. And in other words, this particular sentence implies that Lord Krishna himself doesn't have to do any work. And that's true. Brahma is seeing that child, you know, standing there with, you know, with the hand, you know, morsel of, you know, yogurt, rice and fruit in his hand. And then all this wonderful, you know, transcendental phenomena have occurred. So one can see therefore that it is not at all relevant to think that Krishna is doing everything himself. His energies are working. And this is very beautifully explained in Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Na tasya karyam karanam cha vidyate, na tat samaha abhyadikaha cha drushyate, parasya shakti vividhaiva shruyate, swabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. So this is a very instructive verse on which Srila Prabhupada also has written at various places, including Science of Self-Realization. I was surprised to see that. So this verse implies that the Supreme Lord has nothing to do. Nothing is equal to him or greater than him. Krishna, by his spiritual and material energies, is present everywhere, both in the spiritual and material universes. And Krishna's energies are so expansive, so wide, so extensive, that, and they are endowed with knowledge. Swabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. They are endowed with knowledge and power, both. Because not different from the Lord in one sense. And therefore, they conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a flaw. Now the cosmic manifestation is flawless. The seasons, you know, changing, the sun, you know, rotating around different planets, the sea, the ocean, the rivers, the things happening in nature, the plants, everything is happening very, very systematically and in an organized way. So the energies of the Lord, you know, are doing all this, you know, everything extraordinarily. And this is something to be noted, that Krishna himself doesn't have to work. In Bhagavad Gita, in one of the verses, in the 9th chapter, the Lord says, Prakritim swam avashtabhya visrujami puna puna bhutagramam imam krutsnam avasham prakrute vashat. Krishna says, the whole cosmic order is under me, under my will. It is automatically manifested again and again, and by my will, it is annihilated at the end. So everything is happening by the Ichha Shakti of the Lord. It's not that personally he has to do things. He just has to will it, and his diverse, manifold energies, they immediately start doing their job. So this is really inconceivable. And that's what Lord Brahma is referring to. How could all the things that he experienced, the things, the different inconceivable pastimes which Krishna has been performing and is always performing, they would happen only by his inconceivable energy. So this is a very important point that Lord Brahma is making. After all, he is the most intelligent person, first created being. So the statement that he is making is very, very important. So Srila Prabhupada, in one of his purports, says Krishna creates by his glance and then ordains. So this is the inconceivable Krishna. So Gaurahar Prabhu, in his class yesterday, he was saying that, in brief, he was saying that material nature, everything is orchestrated by the diverse energies of Krishna. He was explaining how the Lord, you know, becomes the moon. Pushnamicha aushadhi sarva somo bhutva rasatmikaha. So the Lord becomes the moon, and thereby he supplies the juice of life to all. So many things are happening in nature. Modern science, in a different sort of way, accepts that nature is very, very predominant. They don't accept that Krishna is the cause of everything. Sarva karana karanam. But they do understand that nature is very, very important. I remember for postgraduate students in our MSc courses, we used to have a paper called Natural Product Chemistry. Chemistry of natural products. Products which are abundant and occurring in nature. It's indeed true. What do chemists do? They isolate products from nature, which are so very, very effective, biologically active. And then they spend years and years, you know, trying to give some structure to that and trying to synthesize that and garner so much glory in the process. Such and such a chemist has synthesized such and such a molecule. So there is this very famous example of a very important complex molecule. I don't want to go into chemistry, just briefly touching upon it. The molecule is vitamin B12. Everybody knows cyanocobalamin, it is called. A very complex structure. If you try to write it on the blackboard, it will take you about 15 minutes to write the structure of vitamin B12. It's got a central cobalt atom, which is responsible for the pink color that you see, vitamin B12. And, you know, so many dipyrrole methionine units, and a very, very complex complex molecule. So its synthesis was the challenge to people. So synthesis was the challenge to people. And so many people were endeavoring to synthesize it part by part. And eventually it was synthesized. In that endeavor, there were 99, you know, scientists engaged from 19 different countries. The synthetic endeavor, you know, was headed by two famous men. One was, you know, R.B. Woodward from Harvard University, and Eschen Moser from Zurich. These were two famous men at the helm of affairs, and you know they were, you know, they were using the energies of the different scientists to make that molecule. It took them 11 years, 11 long years, to make a few milligrams of the sample. And my, the world was agog with excitement. Scientific journals, you know, hailing this synthesis. And how about Mother Nature? Mother Nature manufactures it in a trice. Even today, vitamin B12 is not synthetic. It is made by Lactobacillus Leishmani. So one can understand, therefore, that amazing things and inconceivable things in also science happen. But this is nothing in comparison to the inconceivable things which happen in nature under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam. Everything that happens in nature is so wonderful, so inconceivable. And if only one has the eyes to see and appreciate, one can all connect it to Krishna. The statement which Lord Brahma makes here, that one can make every minute of our life seeing so many wonderful things that are happening. All this has happened because of your inconceivable energy, O Lord. This statement you will have to repeat 1 billion times every day, because everything that is happening in nature is nothing but the supreme, you know, energy of Krishna. So it's a wonderful thing that is happening in nature. So Srila Prabhupada in Science of Self-Realization, I remember reading, so he speaks about flowers blooming. He talks about flowers that are blooming, and he talks about how, you know, on flowers, on one petal there is a particular, you know, spot, on another petal there is another spot, and everything, and then there are such, you know, beautiful colors of different hues in flowers, and this is Krishna's energy working. Then he speaks also about butterfly. He connects it to this energies, multifarious energies of Krishna. He says that the butterfly has got so many such beautiful patterns on its wings, such lustrous, wonderful colors. We don't see it being painted, you know, by the Lord or anything, but it is happening nevertheless. We are not able to see it, but it is there. It is there. So one can see this. So it's all the energy of Krishna, nothing but the energy of Krishna. It's working so very wonderfully. Everything is happening by the energy of the Lord. So this is a very, very important observation which one has to make. Now then again, there is this phenomena of, you know, the sun is the Lord's creation, the sun and the moon. It is described in the Bhagavad Gita how, because of moon, you know, the plants, you know, get the rasa. Everything, all the vegetation, everything gets rasa from moon. And how about the sun? As has been said many times, the sun takes vacation for a day, the whole world would be devastated. So everything happens. The sun's energy is so phenomenal in everything that we see. And sun is nothing but an emanation from the Supreme Lord. So the sun's energy, the chemists like to call it photochemical energy. Photochemistry and photophysics are two very, you know, important branches of science. And both deal with radiation of the sun especially. Then of course they create artificially various lamps which simulate the different wavelengths of the radiation that is emitted by the sun. That's a different field altogether. And what happens in nature? It's wonderful. Now, we, you know, our intake is that of oxygen, and you know we emit carbon dioxide. So if only this were to continue, then this entire planet would be extinct, because there would be no oxygen to breathe. But by the process of, you know, photosynthesis, the carbon dioxide, you know, it gets converted by plants into oxygen. So that's how we are able to survive. So there is, yes, very, very interesting chemistry, interesting science behind all that is happening. But it is happening by the different energies of the Supreme Lord, which Brahmaji is referring to here. It is described that cellulose, which is possibly more than 30 to 40% of the vegetable products. You know, wood also has got, you know, cellulose in it. Cotton has more than 80-90% of cellulose. Maybe my statistics are wrong. I don't remember so many things. But all these, and actually it is described that billions of tons of this cellulosic material is available by photosynthesis. Billions of tons. So how many inconceivable things are happening around us that we can truly appreciate? And therefore, this statement that how could such things happen unless arranged by your inconceivable energy? So this is something which we can really meditate upon all the time. So there's a beautiful verse in Bhagavad Gita which talks about inconceivable energy, inconceivable nature of the Supreme Lord Krishna. I would like to talk about it a brief. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Ano Aniyamsam Anusmaretyaha Sarvasya Dataram Achintya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparasthat. So in this, on this, Srila Prabhupada has written a long purport, but we'll briefly try to understand what this verse is all about. He says that Krishna is saying this. He's saying that one should meditate upon the Supreme Person. We know that it is Krishna. That we should meditate upon him as one who knows everything. Kavi. As he who is the oldest, Puranam. One who is the controller, Anushasitaram. One who is smaller than the smallest, Anoho Aniyamsam. Who is the maintainer of everything, Sarvasya Dhataram. Who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person, Achintya Rupam. Who is transcendental beyond the material nature, Tamasa Parastat. So Srila Prabhupada in his purport comments that the word achintya, inconceivable, is very significant in this connection. God's energy is beyond conception, beyond our thinking jurisdiction, and therefore achintya. Krishna pervades the material world, but is beyond it. So it's really inconceivable. So in this verse, Lord Brahma, who is in the know of everything, he finds Krishna inconceivable and his energy is inconceivable. So what choice do we have, the so-called the pseudo-intellectuals of this world, but to accept that Krishna is inconceivable, his energies are inconceivable. You may analyze so many things, you may do so many things in science, some astounding discoveries may be made, some gold particles may be discovered, so many things would be done. But eventually, you have to go back to the root, and when you go to the root, you understand that you have not understood Krishna. If everything is inconceivable. This is very, very important conclusion. I would like to conclude by the Lord's, all energies are divine and they are inconceivable. So, Krishna says, Daivi esha gunamai mama maya durattaya. So, has anybody seen the illusory energy of Krishna or has anybody made an attempt to see it? So there is a reference to it in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the great Markandeya Rishi, he wanted to make an attempt to see the illusory energy of Krishna. So it is described that Markandeya Rishi, just like Lord Brahma is offering prayers, offered beautiful prayers to the Supreme Lord, and Lord Narayan was very pleased with him. He said, my dear Markandeya, you are indeed the best of all learned brahmanas. And we are perfectly, said Naranarayan Rishi here in this case, we are perfectly satisfied by your lifelong practice of celibacy. Now please choose whatever benedictions that you want. So the Lord is asking Markandeya, ask for any benediction, I give it to you. Markandeya Muni said, he said that the very fact that you have allowed me to see you, the very fact that you have given me a darshan, that means, you know, I have got whatever I wanted. I can't have any other desire than save and accept to have your transcendental darshan. But still, says, O lotus-eyed Lord, I would like to see your illusory potency, energy. It's in the same league as Lord Arjuna, who had constant association of Shyam Sundar Krishna, wanting to see the universal form. Something like that, in the same, but not comparable, I'm just. So, says that, I would like to see your illusory potency, energy. So, the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, who was present before Markandeya in the form of Naranarayan, replied, Tathastu. Okay. So it is described in the Bhagavatam that one evening, Markandeya was performing his worship on the banks of river Pushpabhadra. And everything was calm, cool, tranquil atmosphere, serene, very conducive for spiritual thing. Everything was supremely nice. And then what happened? Suddenly, a great wind, started blowing, making terrible sound. Then fearsome clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder, then filled the sky, and torrential rain, Samavarta clouds, we read about it, again appeared on all sides, and the entire surface of earth was completely inundated with water. So the water of devastation flooded the three worlds, and out of the universe's inhabitants, only Markandeya was living. That was the perception of Markandeya. So, with his matted hair scattered, Markandeya wandered about within the water as if he was dumb and blind. He was tormented by hunger, he was tormented by thirst, and he was attacked by monstrous aquatics like Timingal fish. He was battered by the wind and by the waters and waves of that water of inundation. And then he was wandering aimlessly. He did not know. He was allowed to wander aimlessly. He did not know what he was doing, where he was, what he was doing. Completely bewildered state of existence. And sometimes, he was pulled into the whirlpools. Sometimes let go. Totally very, very difficult situation. And then what happened? Then the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that Markandeya Rishi came upon a banyan tree, chanced to see a banyan tree, and lying upon the leaf of that tree was an infant boy, very innocent, sweet boy, glowing with charming effulgence. His effulgence that he was emanating, the child, was simply charming. And the infant's complexion was dark blue. You can guess who it was. And his face was shining with wealth of beauty. Then as Markandeya looked, the child took hold of his right lotus feet, the thumb of his lotus feet, and he picked it up. Children can do it very easily. No, I can't bend now. But the child can bend the entire, put it in his mouth, the thumb in the mouth, and began to suck it. The acharyas described that the Lord wanted to see, what devotees see in his lotus feet. What nectar do they experience in the lotus feet? So, he just wanted to, he took it in the mouth. So there is a beautiful verse which spontaneously came from Lord Markandeya Rishi. Kararavindena padaravindam mukharavinde viniveshayantam vatasya patrasya puteshayanam balam mukundam shirasa namami. So Markandeya, was dazed. He was looking upon the child and all his weariness. You can imagine, he is aimlessly doing it, he is wandering in these, waters of inundation. And as soon as he beheld this beauty of the child, all his fatigue, everything, was over. And he felt that the lotus of his heart had blossomed in ecstasy. His hair stood on end. So he became ecstatic. And in that ecstasy, he offered this particular prayer. And then he started wondering, who could this child be? Who could this be? And so Markandeya Rishi wanted to approach him. Just as he was trying to go near the child, you know, inhaled. And Markandeya Rishi went into his abdomen. He was sucked in like a vacuum, you know, vacuum sucks things like sucked in, inconceivable energy of the Lord. So what did Markandeya Rishi saw? Again something inconceivable. He saw the entire universe as it had been before the dissolution which he had experienced, and was filled with all its inhabitants. And then he saw the basic elements of creation. He saw before him Himalayas, he saw Pushpabhadra river, his ashram, everything. Just as Mother Yashoda sees herself looking into the mouth of Krishna. Similarly, seeing everything within the abdomen of the Lord. Very analogous thing, situation. And then suddenly, the child exhaled. So then Markandeya Rishi was back into the water of dissolution. So as suddenly as he was in the transcendental abdomen of the Lord, as suddenly, you know, he was thrown out. See, once again, in the vast sea, again he saw the banyan tree and baby lying within a leaf. The child then glanced at Markandeya out of the corner of his eyes with a smile imbued with nectar of love. So the Lord was telling her, so you want to see my illusionary energy? I have given you a sample. Similarly, in bewildering Lord Brahma, Krishna has just given a jhalak, you know, just a jhalak of his mystic potency. It's not that he has used all his, exhausted his mystic potency, just tiny glimpse, and that is enough to bewilder Brahma. Similarly here, Krishna gave that jhalak of his potency, illusory potency. So then he wanted, Markandeya desperately wanted to embrace that beautiful child. He wanted to bring him in within his heart. So, but when he wanted to do that, Markandeya found that he was back in his ashram, sitting on the river bank. Everything had vanished. Everything had particularly vanished. So this is the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord. So after witnessing the opulent display of the bewildering potency, Markandeya Rishi took shelter of the Supreme Lord with great intensity. So that is all that we can do. So many things happen in our spiritual life. So many things happen in our material life. We cannot really understand what is happening, why it is happening, how it is happening. But we can certainly take shelter of the Supreme Lord and leave it to Him to guide our destiny the way He wants to do it. Hare Krishna. Anybody has any questions or comments, please feel free. Comment, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Recently I was talking to one devotee and he was mentioning about all the different energies of the Lord, especially the planets, how they are placed, and therefore he's saying that all these sciences are very perfect. So in that sense there is Vastu, there is astrology. Now how far are devotees supposed to use these things in their life? Because what he was mentioning, that what I have heard also, is that we use it in service of Krishna,
yeah,
for making a temple. But what this devotee was mentioning, that it is also mentioned in many places where, for example, you know, sitting postures, or for meditation, or for doing things. Should I go out of this place to do something? So how far should one get involved in all these things? Because devotees are doing this or feel a need. It is helpful, because using in service of Krishna means like a very broad term.
Yeah.
Our whole lives, we can say, is in service of Krishna. So every day I can use it then. So can you just...
We we have to accept that some of these sciences are very accurate, extremely accurate. And it's not that we should look at science with contempt. I will never do it. It was my bread and butter. So we should look at, we should respect the scientific findings. And because, for example, the distances that, you know, the sun from the earth planet, how they are moving about, all these have been very accurately calculated. And the scientists are very accurate about it. They are able to tell you that how if the Lord, you know, if the sun, you know, shifts even by a fraction of a centimeter, what devastating effect it can have. So all this is accurately known to the astronomers, and even the astrological science is accurate in some ways. So Vastu and other things also, they also are not, they are also, you know, correct in their own way. But when they start, when these try to, you know, overrule the transcendental greatness of the Supreme Lord, and when these sciences take you away from the reality, you know, then, you know, we have to be very, very cautious and be guarded. It is not wrong to take help of some of these sciences if we are in hands of sincere and honest people. Sometimes there is a lot of hoax going on also. And so we have to be cautious about that. But if we assure ourselves that, you know, we are the person knows his science very well, then taking guidance is not wrong. Just like, you know, we would go to a doctor to get guidance, we can take guidance from such people. But to deny, to, you know, base everything on that finding, that would be, you know, wrong. So we would get completely misled. So we have to be very, very cautious. So we don't disrespect, you know, science. I can tell you that scientists, you know, spend their lifetime, they dedicate themselves to the job on hand. It's not that. But where they go wrong is that they are not able to connect it to Krishna, where they think that they have become supreme. So what are the findings? You know, no, R.B. Woodward, such a famous man in Harvard University, is no more. So people die. You know, what is the value of their, you know, greatness? But so if we have to connect ourselves to that which is permanent, and that is Krishna and his energies, Srimati Radharani. So we have to take care of them. I don't know whether I have answered your question correctly, made a feeble attempt. Hari Bol Prabhuji.
Krishna.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavata Puranam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.